Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the October 3rd meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll, Carla?
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Hales?
Here. And could you read the item before us?
Item 947, approve and adopt zoning confirmation letter responding to request for zoning confirmation on Lot 7, Station Place, submitted by Right to Dream 2 and Williams Dane and Dame and Associates, Inc.
Thank you. I'm going to make a couple of opening comments and set us up for your input and testimony this afternoon. I'm going to then call on City Attorney to ground us in the decision that we have in front of us, and then on Commissioner Fritz and the Bureau to make a report. We're here to talk about a particular issue, but it's part of a larger context, and it's one that I, as your mayor, and that members of this City Council and a lot of other community leaders need to do a lot of work on. And that is, we have about 1,800 people who are going to sleep outside tonight in Portland, and that's a community failure. Although a lot of good heart and good work have gone into trying to address that crisis, it's still with us every night. And it's something that I take personally, and I think all of us do. I know all of us do. And that we're all going to put heart and soul into working on. And that this particular decision about a particular local solution to part of that problem needs to be kept in that larger context. How can we as a community do better than we're doing today in dealing with the problems of homelessness and the fallout of larger failed systems of mental health and housing and drug treatment that we all as community members and some of us as public servants need to work on together. Those 1,800 people or so that will be outside tonight are all different people. They have different needs and desires and problems, capacities, and we have to take that into account. We have, in the case of this particular organization, R2D2, a group of people who, to my mind, have proven some real ability to govern themselves, to solve public safety problems within their community, and to help make transition from homelessness to housing and back into the economy for quite a few people, and I'm impressed by that. Of course, we all know the evolution of this particular situation at 4th and Burnside involves some conflicts between the city and the property owner, and I want to particularly commend Commissioner Fritz for her hard work in trying to resolve that conflict and getting past that to a better day for the city and that property owner and for everybody else affected by that conflict and its twists and turns. So we're here to take up a particular question about R2D2 and the legal basis on which it can be moved from one place to another. But I hope to hear not only your opinions about whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, or whether the city's staff's legal reasoning is good or flawed, but I really want to hear today and later your ideas on how we as a community can do better, how we can have more people sleeping indoors, not in tents, more people getting treatment and getting access to services, more people finding work and getting back into the economy. That's something, as I said at the outset, that I have a passion for. I have a growing understanding of it, not that I brought a lot of understanding of it to this office, but I'm spending a lot of time literally on the streets with people that know more than I do learning about it, and I plan to spend more. Let me talk a little bit about this hearing. We're going to try to hear from all of you. We're going to do that with a time limit. I'd like to set a time limit of 2 minutes instead of three. I know we typically have a three-minute time limit for public testimony because there's so many people here and so many people signed up. I'd like to enforce a two-minute time limit. Usually we can say what we need to say succinctly if we have a little time to think about it, and unfortunately for all of you who are signed up after the first 10 or 15, you'll have plenty of time to think about it. I'm not being flippant about that, but I think it will help us all if we give more people a chance to have a say. There are some rules of decorum in this room. Everybody gets to have a chance to have their say without being heckled or challenged from the audience, and that's the Portland way, and I ask you to respect that. If you don't respect that, then we'll have to ask you to leave, but hopefully that won't be necessary. With that, let me ask our city attorney to ground us in the decision in front of the council. And again, after that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fritz to set the stage for the resolution in front of us.
Mayor Hales, members of the council, I'm Catherine Beaumont with the city attorney's office. For purposes of establishing a little framework, I'd like to describe the nature of today's hearing. It's not like the land use matters the council typically hears, in substance or in procedure. This is not an appeal hearing on a quasi-judicial land use review, and it's not a hearing on a legislative proposal to amend the city's comprehensive plan, zoning maps, or zoning code. What's before you today is a resolution to affirm and adopt the BDS director's recommended answers to questions about how the zoning code applies to a proposed use of property. Specifically, the director's been asked whether a rest area tent camp proposed to be located below the west end of the Broadway Bridge is allowed under the zoning code and whether any land use approvals are required. The director's recommended answers are that the proposed rest area is an allowed use and requires no design review or land use reviews. You are being asked to decide whether you agree with the director's interpretation and application of the zoning code. If a majority of the council votes yes on the resolution, it means that you do and are adopting his interpretations of the zoning code as your own. This will be the city's final decision on the questions answered in the zoning confirmation letter. However, adoption of the resolution is only a beginning, not an end. It answers general zoning questions about the proposed rest area, tent camp, and nothing more. There are many future steps that will need to be taken before the rest area can make the physical move to the proposed site. Those steps are not the subject of today's hearing. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions for Catherine or Roland? Okay.
Well, I guess I have a question. The city took the owner of the property on Northwest 4th and Burnside, cited that owner for violating the city code by establishing what we interpreted to be a recreation campground. That was the closest use we could come to determine what it was in our code. And so we found them to be in violation of our code. So what is different about this determination that this use would be legal, because the properties are zoned similarly? 4th and Burnside, I think, is zoned CXD, and then the Lovejoy Ramp property is EXD.
That's correct.
What's in a nutshell, is the rationale why they were in violation at one location but possibly not in violation under this zoning interpretation?
Roland DePerigary, City Attorney's Office. The initial determination that was made against the property owners at 4th and Burnside was based on the lack of the property owners at 4th and Burnside to approach the city and apply for any permit to have any discussion with the city about the activities of that site. And the city, based on that unavailability by the property owners to avail themselves to the city authority, the city commenced nuisance action and enforcement action.
Mm-hmm. So in short, the failure of the property owner to apply for any type of approval.
Had they applied,
okay,
I think it would be a different story.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you. Obviously, we'll need to call on you as we proceed. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, and thank you for your partnership on trying to resolve these problems, which indeed Commissioner Saltzman spent many hours looking at while he was the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Development Services, because it is important that the city has the right and the responsibility to regulate uses on lots and to make sure that uses are legal. So the proposed move to the current site, to the proposed site, is an element in a settlement agreement that preserves the city's right to regulate the uses on lots, and I believe that's in everybody's interest to maintain that right. Right to Dream 2 has been able to reach and serve populations that other community services have been unable to serve, including couples, homeless people with pets, people who have a fear or mistrust of shelter for multiple reasons. And for the past 2 years, they've been operating safely at their current site at 4th and Burnside. Being homeless is not a crime. and people experiencing homelessness are some of the most vulnerable people in our community. They're our neighbors, our friends, our cousins, our family of Portland residents with feelings and emotions, and they deserve our respect. Providing a new site for Right to Dream 2 will mean that up to 100 people will be able to sleep in safety without, and they'll be able to sleep in safety on a lot that with all the right permissions, will they will have permission to be there. They won't, that'll be up to 100 people who won't be in doorways, on sidewalks, and in other places where it's not legal to sleep. So I appreciate that there's been a lot of conversation about this to date, although this is the first public hearing on this issue. I'm very appreciative that everybody has come to testify and to everybody who has written in advance and who will continue to participate in this process. There are many other steps before Right to Dream 2 would be allowed to move to the new site. We need to negotiate a use agreement by the end of October, and then a good neighbor agreement, which will involve a lot of community conversations. And as the mayor said, he and I have both learned a lot about the issues associated with behavior on streets, some of which is done by people who are experiencing homelessness, and some of the illegal behavior is done by people who come to Old Town Chinatown and the Pearl District to go to restaurants and get drunk before they go home and have some pretty bad behaviors. So we and I recognize that there's a lot more to livability in Old Town Chinatown and the Pearl District than simply the move of up to 100 people. I believe it might be one of the elements that could help address the situation, but there will be many others, including probably setting up a public safety committee between the two neighborhood association business district participants. So this is just the beginning of an ongoing process, and certainly it's become very clear to me that when we opened Bud Clark Commons in June of 2011, we were all hoping that that would be a great clearinghouse and entry into services for a lot of people experiencing homelessness, and indeed it has been. And I commend the Housing Bureau for their ongoing efforts, commend the entire council for putting as much money as we could find in this budget where we cut $20 million, we preserved the safety net for housing, and we're now talking about providing more opportunities for rent assistance, for preventing homelessness, for addressing the bigger picture. So again, this hearing today is just one piece of an ongoing discussion about how do we compassionately care for people who live inside and people who live outside in Portland, and how do we as a community address the challenges that collectively we face. With that, I would like to turn it over to Rebecca Isor from the Bureau of Development Services, who's going to run through the zoning confirmation letter. A zoning confirmation letter is a common thing that we're asked in development services that a property owner or an applicant for a use writes to the Bureau and says, what's the zoning on my property and what I'm allowed to do there? And then the staff often has to look at the entire code and look at what best matches that particular use, because not absolutely everything that could possibly be done on a lot is specifically called out. And there are general categories, and the staff says which category does this specific use fall into. So Rebecca Isor, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Rebecca Isor. I manage the Land Use Services Division at BDS, and beside me is Douglas Hardy, a senior planner at BDS. The Bureau of Development Services received two applications for a zoning confirmation letter for the site, for the same site and proposal. One application was from the Right to Dream 2 nonprofit corporation, and the other was from Williams, Dame & Associates. The applications each ask a series of questions about how the zoning code applies to a proposal for a rest area or campground managed by Right to Dream 2 at a site underneath the west end of the Broadway Bridge. First, before we get into the contents, as Commissioner Fritz was just saying, it's important to clarify what a zoning confirmation letter is. It's an optional service BDS offers customers. It's a venue for customers to have BDS staff do research into specific questions and provide information in writing about how the zoning code applies to a specific proposal at a specific site. Many customers choose to apply for a zoning confirmation letter as part of their due diligence prior to purchasing a piece of property. A zoning confirmation letter focuses on zoning requirements and doesn't cover all of the other requirements that might apply to a proposal. It isn't a permit, and it's not a land use review. The site is Lot 7 of Station Place and is located under the Lovejoy Ramp at the west end of the Broadway Bridge, just south of Northwest Lovejoy Court. Station Place parking garage is located across the street to the north. To the east and southeast are the Union Station rail yards and Union Station. To the south are the yards and buildings of the main U.S. Post Office, and to the west is the Lovejoy Ramp abutment. The site is zoned EXD, which is the Central Employment Zone, with a design overlay zone, and is in the Central City Plan District, the River District Subdistrict, and the North Pearl subarea. The site is owned by PDC and is currently developed with a surface parking lot. The proposal is to provide a temporary rest area with tents for overnight shelter for people of the community who do not have a home and need a place to rest or reside. The rest area or tent camp is expected to be at this location for up to 1 year, with 100 people staying there at any given time. Individuals may be located at the site for one night or longer. The rest area will be managed by Right to Dream 2, a nonprofit corporation. There will be electrical service, water service, gray water disposal, portable toilets, and a solid waste disposal area. In 1991, with the adoption of the current form of the zoning code, the city shifted from a system of listing all specific uses allowed in each zone, such as bookstore or machine shop, to a system of listing use categories, such as retail, sales, and service. The legislative intent was to create more flexibility, acknowledging it isn't possible to anticipate every specific current and future use. The use categories are each described in the zoning code by their characteristics, and examples are provided, and in some cases, exceptions listed. The use categories are not intended to identify or list every possible use that could be assigned to each use category. The code's reference to present and future uses underscores the non-exclusive nature of the uses described and the examples listed. The zoning code says proposals for uses or development where the code is silent or where the rules in that particular code section do not provide a basis for concluding that the proposal is allowed are prohibited. So the first question is if the code is silent and whether the rules in that code section lead to a conclusion that the proposed rest area is prohibited. BDS's answer to those questions, or recommended answer, is no. The use category descriptions in the zoning code provide enough descriptions and examples to guide us in determining the appropriate use category. Land uses are classified into the use categories on the basis of common functional, product, or physical characteristics, including the description of the activity, the type of customers or residents, how the use advertises itself, etc. BDS considered several use categories in this analysis: community service use, retail sales and service use, and group living. The analysis led to the recommendation that the proposal be considered a community services use. The zoning code describes the characteristics of community services use as follows. Community services are uses of a public, nonprofit, or charitable nature, generally providing a local service to people of the community. Generally, they provide the service on the site or have employees at the site on a regular basis. The service is ongoing, not just for special events. The proposed rest area provides a local service, which is a temporary place to rest and sleep overnight in tents under the shelter of a bridge ramp. It is charitable in nature and will be provided to people of the community. It will be managed by a nonprofit, and the service will be ongoing, not just for special events. The zoning code provides a non-exclusive list of examples of community service uses. The list includes senior centers, community centers, youth club facilities, hospices, drug and alcohol centers, social service facilities, mass shelters or short-term housing when operated by a public or nonprofit agency, soup kitchens, surplus food distribution centers, etc. A rest area or tent camp for people without a home is similar to some of these examples in that it provides a place to rest and find shelter to members of the community who have no homes. Mass shelters and short-term housing are defined in the code, and BDS concluded that based on those definitions, what's being proposed is not either of those types of community service uses. Zoning code directs that uses should be assigned to the category whose description most closely describes the nature of the primary use. It is BDS's recommendation that the community services use category most closely describes the nature of this proposed use. The zoning code states that in the EX zone, most community services uses are allowed by right. Short-term housing and mass shelters may be allowed by right if they meet certain standards or may be a conditional use. Since the proposed rest area tent camp is not a mass shelter or short-term housing, these standards don't apply, and BDS's recommendation is that it only, not only is the proposed use a community service use, but that is allowed by right and it doesn't require a conditional use review. Although zoning code section 33700.005 states all new development changes to existing development and changes in the type or number of uses requires a building permit, the term building permit is not a defined term in the zoning code. The zoning code section does not create an independent requirement for a building permit when the building code would not require a building permit. This zoning code section is viewed in context with the 2010 Oregon Structural Specialty Code, which in section 105 requires that the applicant make an application to the building official and apply for the required permit. It doesn't use the term building permit. Title 24, Building Regulations, states that a separate permit known as a development permit shall be required for a site development, changes in use, or other work performed in compliance with Title 33. Based on the information from Right to Dream 2 about the proposal, for Title 24, the appropriate permit for this proposal is a development permit. The design review chapter first describes the types of development that require design review, unless specifically exempted. That section is followed by a list of the subset of projects that are exempt from design review. So all the proposal involves exterior alterations, and that would normally require design review. The work doesn't require a building permit and is therefore exempt from design review. The existing parking lot was most recently allocated 65 spaces in a 2012 Central City parking review. There is no applicable minimum parking requirement for this site, and this allocation is permissive. In other words, the 65 spaces are allowed but not required. In conclusion, based on the information that was provided, BDS recommends that City Council conclude that the proposed rest area be classified as a community services use and that it is an allowed use and does not require either a design review or a modification of any previous land use approvals. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Questions for our staff?
So earlier in your presentation, you talked about the duration of the rest area being 1 year. And no more than 100 people at the site at a given time. Is that a function at all of the zoning determination?
That's a function of the proposal that they provided to us.
It's not a part requirement. Of the community service zoning designation?
No.
Okay. And then could you just briefly summarize again why it's a community service use as opposed to a mass shelter use?
Okay, yeah. So the definition of mass shelter is a structure that contains one or more open sleeping areas or is divided only by non-permanent partitions furnished with cots, floor mats, or bunks. Individual sleeping rooms are not provided. The shelter may or may not have food preparation or shower facilities. The shelter is managed by a public or nonprofit agency to provide shelter with or without a fee on a daily basis. So the way it starts out saying it's a structure that contains one or more sleeping areas. And then when you look at the standards for it, it implies there's a building, something like the Portland Rescue Mission, or where you have bunks and cots. And the standards talk about spacing between sleeping areas, et cetera. It doesn't seem to mesh with that or the definition for short-term housing.
And does a community service use or a mass shelter require it be operated by a nonprofit? Or is that just that's typically what they are, but not necessarily required?
With a mass shelter, it says the shelter is managed by a public or nonprofit agency, so that's if it were managed by some other entity, it probably would not be considered a mass shelter.
And then this particular community service designation for the Lovejoy site, Does that require it also be managed by a nonprofit or not?
The definition, well, the characteristics for community service, say that it's a community services or uses of a public, nonprofit, or charitable nature. So it's not something that you would do for profit.
Okay.
So if you had a KOA campground where you're, you know, renting spaces basically for someone to come, that would be a retail sales and service
more of a,
use.
The charitable use is the kind of the
yeah.
operational phrase.
Yes.
There. Okay, thanks.
Other questions? All right, thank you. Stand by. Sorry, yeah, I'll get closer here. Okay, thank you very much. Now we're going to begin public testimony. Again, please try to confine your remarks to 2 minutes so we give everyone a chance to speak. The council is going to hear testimony until 5 o'clock. We're going to take a one-hour break and then resume at 6 as needed. So we'll take the next 2.5 hours and see where we are. So with that, I know you have a sign-up list. Please call the first 3 or 4 people, Carl.
Okay. We'll call up in groups of 4, and right now we have a total of 107 people signed up.
Okay.
The first 4, please come on up, are Barbara Wirth, Laura Griffiths, Nancy Snyder, and Ronald Alexander. They will be followed by Irene Londralte, Claudia Pisic, Ramona Odians, I believe it is, and Ronald Boltz. Thank you. Then after, we'll go with Wade A. Varner, the next group.
Thanks. Just need to put your name into the record and then proceed.
Okay. My name is Barbara Wirth. It's W-E-E-R-T-H. I live at Station Place Tower, which is a building for seniors with incomes below the median. And many of us living there have physical and mental disabilities, which makes day-to-day living a challenge and a need for safety and security an absolute necessity. Most of us chose Station Place because of the neighborhood. The lot that you are currently talking about is right out our back door. There is one sidewalk beside it, which is our direct access to the MAX, to the buses, Amtrak, and Greyhound. And for many in our building with mobility issues, walking around that immediate block is their form of exercise, plus there's benches. And because they can't get out very much, they use those benches as their park, a place to sit in the sun, et cetera. Putting R2-D2 into that lot really is compromising our safety and our security. Ms. Fritz is right when she says we do not get to choose our neighbors, but there's a distinct difference between a neighbor who doesn't keep his yard up, is noisy, et cetera, and having 100 strangers sleeping in your backyard. The way this is set up, we will have 700 more new neighbors each week. Those are people are literal strangers that we will have to deal with. The safety and security issues should be readily apparent. How long before someone tries to sneak into a warm building or knocks down a senior and takes their purse? How does someone with mobility issues walk to the MAX if there's 100 people lined up on the sidewalk or hanging around? And just as a side note, where do the other people go at night that get turned away? Where are they going to be in our neighborhood? And that doesn't even start to talk about the issues of health, dogs that don't have shots, too many people in a small area, drugs, alcohol, and mental illness. My belief is that zoning codes and rules exist to protect existing neighborhoods. However, right now, moving the homeless into a parking lot full of pigeon droppings with polluted air, no sunlight, rusty acidic water dripping on them is more important than maintaining the safety of an existing community that also is fragile and also does not have a lot of money. We don't have the option to move elsewhere because we are in this building because we don't have a lot of money. So we're just asking you to take us into consideration because in the scheme of things, nobody has considered those of us in that building.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Laura Griffiths, I'm also a resident of Station Place Tower. I will say that I'm mentally ill. I'm permanently disabled. 14 years ago, I was diagnosed with bipolar 1 disorder and treatment-resistant depression. In that part of my life, I was unable to continue my career as a registered nurse in pediatric oncology. I had to retire after 8 years as the U.S. Army nurse attached to the 323rd Combat Support Hospital in Detroit, Michigan. I had to withdraw from the 6th Marathon. I was scheduled to walk for the Leukemia Society, and 23 years of marriage ended soon after my diagnosis. Barbara Wirth is going to finish my speech. I have vocal tremors due to essential tremor.
Thank you for your service to our country.
Thank you.
All right. It is estimated that 30% of homeless individuals suffer from mental illness. Without the support of my family and adequate treatment by psychiatric specialists, I could be homeless, incarcerated, or dead. The mental illnesses most prevalent among the homeless are schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and severe PTSD. A schizophrenic not on medication may hear voices telling him to attack the woman across the street before she harms him. The soldier who fought in Vietnam may believe that the streetcar rumbling overhead is the sound of incoming artillery. Finally, a bipolar person who thinks they can fly might fly off the Lovejoy ramp. It is naive for the leader of R2-D2 to believe that he will keep peace under a bridge next to the Bud Clark Commons. The two areas he refers to are like apples and oranges. Placing the R2-D2 nonprofit business under the Lovejoy ramp is subjecting two vulnerable groups, the homeless campers and the residents of Station Place Tower, to the worst possible of situations. I waited 4 years for the call notifying me that I had an apartment at SPT. I wanted so badly to live in this building because it is beautiful green and it was a safe area of Portland. Now walking to Amtrak or the MAX platform is daunting. The Station Place Tower community no longer feels safe, and I challenge the city commissioners to walk from our building to the MAX on any day of the week and experience for themselves our plight.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Nancy Snyder, and I live at Station Place Tower. I'm a resident of Portland and have enjoyed living downtown Portland for 23 years and in the Pearl District for 8 years. I have already submitted my health and safety concerns and emails to each of you, and hopefully you've had time to consider them so I don't take your time today repeating them. But I wanted you to have a face to go with a resident that lives in the Pearl District that is passionate about the issues that are before you. The one thought that I would like to leave with you today is that if you allow the covert decisions that have been made without consideration of the people this affects most, you will be setting a precedent for the city of Portland to give permits and allow for tent camps on city land in any neighborhood of your choice in the future. This is far more reaching than just here and now. You need to stand up and do the right thing, even when it's difficult. I'm appalled that one commissioner is being allowed to circumvent laws without due process and without accountability to one another and the public. The wrong thing was done covertly to settle a lawsuit against the lawbreakers of Mr. Wright, Mr. Kosat, and against Ibrahim Mubarak of R2-D2 to drop the charges and to promise them property in a suit that you should have won and not settled. The wrong thing is being done once again to not stop this corruption. This is not good for you. It's not good for us. It's not good for them. It's not good for the businesses and the residents of the Pearl. And in the future, it's not good for other neighborhoods. You will be hurting more people than helping by moving the Right to Dream 2 camp that Commissioner Amanda Fritz has solely and covertly has promised at the Lovejoy parking structure behind Station Place Tower. And I thank you for listening.
Thank you.
My name is Ronald Alexander, and I'm a resident of Station Place Tower. I have two questions, really. What are we going to do about the Multnomah County Code that supposedly takes precedence on the bridges and what goes on around the bridges? The code number 15.335 states that there will be no camping under bridges. Now, I don't know whether the city code supersedes the county code, but I think the county has to be brought into the loop on this. And the reason I know that that's the code is because it's posted underneath the Broadway ramp of the Broadway Bridge across from Union Station in two different places. The second question deals with our security as senior citizens at Station Place Tower. Are we going to get police patrol in the area around the proposed campsite And is the city prepared to have cleanup crews patrol the area and keep it clean? As of this date, we do not have these patrols, and the walkways around the area are littered with just about everything you can imagine, far too many for me to elaborate here. It is also a disgrace to the Pearl District, and we have to walk through that every day to get to the MAX lines. I moved to Station Place Tower to get away from the same mess and legal actions from the yards behind Union Station. I cannot afford to keep moving because the city refuses to address the homeless problem. Those of us on a limited income cannot afford to be moving every few months just so we can find a safe, secure place to live. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
The next four are Irene Londraville, Claudia Pisick, Ramona Odierns, and Wade Varner. And they'll be followed by Anthony Jensen, Julie Young, Fayama Elias, and Kenneth Thrasher.
Good afternoon.
I am Irene Laundrie.
Sorry, not your fault.
Okay. I'm a resident of Station Place Tower, adjacent to Station Place Way, where the houseless are planned to be settled. Society must be judged by how well it takes care of its most vulnerable, and I am one of them. Why would our Portland City Council willingly change the law against camping in the city by calling it community servants? Presently, there are empty buildings that are habitable. One in Old Town lies empty because the city would need to staff it. The empty Wapato Jail, costing thousands to maintain. There are empty junior and senior schools where all necessary facilities and cafeteria are available. The rooms are 40 by 40. You could have communal living, and you have plenty of offices to bring in the services. Why are these not even being considered? Cost of staffing? The cost of this ill-conceived attempt would abate that cost. Presently, it's illegal to camp in tents or sleep under bridges. Why change the law? One does two wrongs make a right. Besides the fumes from the trucks at the post office where our building seals off the moving away from under the ramp and the trains, it's also adjacent to the river where rats abound. Is this how we care for our vulnerable? Is this treating humans with dignity? You who withhold uphold the law and deny this request, say, if not me, then who? If you individually feel you prefer to uphold the law but waver, if not now, then when? It returns to the question, if not me, then who? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Claudia Pisick, and I live at Station Place Tower as well. Moving Right to Dream under the Lovejoy ramp will negatively impact the residents of Station Place Tower in many ways. While that is being addressed by others from Station Place, my concern is the financial impact and public involvement statement. You've stated that there would be no financial impact to the city changing the usage from a parking lot to a rent-free homeless camp. That is just not true. One commonality of larger cities is the lack of parking spaces. During the past 5 years, people who live in this area can attest to the lessening of available on-street parking. That is only going to continue as the economy improves and the vacant lots in this immediate area are developed. There will only be an increasing demand for parking, not only for residents in this area, but for tourists and persons working here. Commissioner Fritz acknowledged at the meeting she held at Station Place that the city would have costs. Those include cleaning up the pigeon droppings, getting rid of the pigeons, the installation of required utility services, i.e. water service, electrical panel, gray water disposal. And since this is only temporary, there would be costs involved in returning the area to a parking lot. Commissioner Fritz did not address a solution to the rusty acidic water that comes off the bridge every time it rains, but it will have to be addressed. If it has ruined the paint on the cars parked there, it certainly is going to be hazardous to the people and tents of a homeless camp. Seems to me it would be in the city's best interest to spend the money to turn this area into what it was originally designed for, to be a fully functioning, money-generating parking lot. Since placing the homeless camp in this location is a temporary fix My thinking is that the city would be better off served by retaining the area as a parking lot, unless that temporary is only word manipulation to fit the codes and the intent.
Keep going, that's
thank
fine.
You. And the intent is to make it permanent. So thank you for your
thank
time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Ramona Odierna, and I live in the Station Place Tower. And I have just a couple questions I would like to know. And my questions are realistic because not all of us can afford the luxury to dream all the time. Some of us have to deal also with reality. And I would like to know from commissioners and from the mayor why this camp is constantly being represented and misrepresented and romanticized, when it is clearly not what they claim to be. All you need to do is look at their blog and pick their numbers apart, which are available to everybody. And if you get the percentage, then it's pretty clear that they've been rather a failure and not a success. And they claim to have served, where I'm not sure what the service entails, 25,000 people in a 21-month period. That translates to 38.9 new people every night. Now, Amanda, you claim that this is a stable situation. I would like to know from you, how is that a stable situation? We do know that among the homeless is a certain percentage of ex-convicts and especially sex offenders. I'm getting it from the Oregon State Police sex offender website here, that sex offenders who live in an unstable situation have a much higher likelihood of reoffending, and that would, of course, apply to living in a camp. So I would like to know why this, after decades of wonderful effort by the developers, by businesses, and especially by the city to reverse urban flight, and which has culminated in the creation of the Pearl District, which is the show and tell for the city of Portland and is being mentioned everywhere in the world, even not just in the United States. Why the city is now hell-bent, pardon my German, to reverse this urban renewal and create what by definition anywhere else in the world but in Portland is called a slum. You're establishing a slum under the bridge. You're shoving these people who are destitute and in urgent need for real solution temporarily out of sight, and that's all it is. And I would like to just know why.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Wade Varner. I'm with Homeless Against Homelessness in America, and I'm a formerly homeless veteran who spent 21 years on the streets, 11 of those sleeping rough. So, yeah, I know what it is, and I'm not a child molester or a criminal. I was just a punk, a junk, and a drunk, and I needed somebody to give me the hand up, and people did. Burnside Projects gave me the drug and alcohol treatment that I needed to get to where I am today to open my nonprofit to help other people do what we do. If we simply pass the same measure that they have in Seattle and Eugene, where the small nonprofits like them and me and all the rest of the nonprofits that are around here can take in a few people in different places, but all we get is this NIMBY. That was pure NIMBY right there, not in my backyard, please. We cannot have that happening in our city. Portland is not like that. Portland this is not the Portland that I grew up in, and I was born 30 blocks away from here 56 years ago. I spent 21 years out here on the streets of Portland, so I know what it's like to sleep rough, and it ain't no fun when you have people constantly waking you up, constantly harassing you, constantly putting the stress on it. That is against the constitutional rights, the human rights, and basic mean people suck. And let's not be the mean people. What is Portland? I mean, are we going to turn into South Carolina, where the city just turned 34 blocks of their downtown into a no homeless area? And they were going to bust them out and give them tickets if they don't? How much are we spending every time these guys ride a ticket? That could be, I mean, for the price that you're using the people that take care of the homeless, and the price that you're paying for the people that don't take care of the homeless, is about the same amount. If you simply took that money from trying to harass them and turned that into definite housing, 25 to 30 cents a day is all it takes to keep somebody in permanent supportive housing than it does to keep them homeless. Let's not be mean people here in Portland, please.
Thank you. Folks, I know there's enthusiasm in the room, but let's give everybody a fair hearing. Okay, next four, please.
Are Anthony Jensen, Julie Young, Fayama Elias, and Kenneth Thrasher. They'll be followed by Dan Valine, Michael McKenna, Gloria Harrington, and Gail Shepherd.
Good afternoon. Go ahead, Ken. You look like you're ready.
Mayor Hales and commissioners. I'm Ken Thrasher, and I live at 1001 Northwest Lovejoy. I've sent a letter to all of you on Tuesday and given a copy here to the clerk. I want to just spend my time on the third point in the letter because I think we already know that the first two points about this not being the right place for this group of folks and also is not right for the community are going to be talked about a lot. But I do think that when we look at questions 4 and 5 of the financial impact and public involvement statement that were filed on this situation by Amanda Fritz and signed, it said there would be no revenue or expense impact by this action. And I'd like to just take us back to what we have to do in Borton, and that's look at highest and best use of property. And in the case of this site, we've heard a number of times in a lot of the press where the parking structure, Station Place, and the property that we're talking about are underutilized. Well, I've been over there this week under the parking lot, Station Place Parking, and I've given pictures to you, and I've been there 3 days. It's been absolutely capacity. And we're building a brand new hotel. We're building a new condo and a number of other apartments that we're going to put a lot of pressure on this site in the near term. And those 65 parking spots are going to be of use. And if you look at $100 to $120 a month for monthly parking, the value of that is about $78,000 to $93,000 per year. And if you capitalize that at 9%, that's $1 million value roughly. And it's double that if you go to day-to-day rates. The other thing I think you have to look at this site is that we're going to risk lower rentals in the Marriott and around the businesses. So that's going to have business income tax effects. And on the Marriott, there's 6% room tax to the city, 5.5% to the county, and 2% goes to the Portland Tourism Group. So there's going to be a financial impact to that. Zeba's building is not going to be as leasable as those vacancies are today, and that's going to cause additional vacancies, which when you use the income test, will mean that their property tax valuations will drop, and they will probably ask for abatement along with homeowners. So there are expenses here. There are real costs. We know what they are. They're liability. They're the sewer hookups, water, electricity, and other costs, legal costs. And so to say that there's no cost, no impact to revenues, I think, is a gross understatement, and we should stop this.
Next.
Hello. I'm Julie Young. Mayor Hales and commissioners, I'm a retired social worker. I've lived in the Pearl District for 16 years. I worked with disenfranchised adults and vulnerable families whose lives were difficult in every way imaginable. As a social worker, I worked with vulnerable and homeless families. I'm now a volunteer with social service organizations, and I represent the city on the Portland Children's Levy Allocation Committee. The city of Portland and its neighborhoods are renowned for innovative and sustainable solutions to land use planning, transportation options, and economic development. As taxpayers and voters, as residents, no matter what our means are, we have come to expect this, to applaud it, and to be proud of it. Smart, long-term, bold strategies that preserve and enhance the quality of life for the common good is what we should be looking for. I am opposed to the siting of Right to Dream or any tent community anywhere in our city because I can't reconcile in any way the tented rest areas align with this city's or this region's values and goals, nor what we as individuals believe qualifies as a solution to the problem of homelessness. I find it reprehensible that the city council could encourage or would in fact apportion our tax dollars to support tent communities. Is this the best we can do? It's disappointing also that in a city known for process, civic engagement, and creativity, we sit here today in a sad, confrontational, divisive atmosphere because communication was intentionally closed. How different this might have been had all parties been invited to come to the table in advance to share our experiences, our perspectives, our fears, and most importantly, how we can collaborate on sustainable solutions. Fortunately, it's not too late. You have the choice to exercise leadership and give time for creative minds to work this out in a manner that reflects Portland's reputation for progressive solutions. I respectfully ask you to vote no on the resolution introduced by Commissioner Fritz. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Fiamma Elias, and I've been invited to speak up here on behalf of my good friend, Jane Kennedy, who is a part of the Metropolitan Association and has lived in she's an original owner, lived in her place for 6 years, and has actually lived in the Northwest for 21 years. And Jane describes herself as an almost 74 single white woman. And she has asked me to come and speak on this on her behalf because I have spent the last 18 months filming my film called Home Skillet, which is a Portland film and is the story of a woman, Maggie, who awakens to the homeless and goes on a protest fast that changes the lives of everyone around her. And during the 18-month course of filming this film, we have filmed dozens and dozens and dozens of interviews with homeless citizens on the street. We have been under all of the bridges in this community. We have included R2-D2 in our film. We have shot at Goose Hollow Shelter and Portland Rescue Mission. And Jane believes that I have an inside perspective to bring to the table. Jane and I both believe that the diversity of Portland is one of our greatest strengths and that we are an urban center. And the stance of not in my backyard is both unproductive and unrealistic. Homelessness is not going away. We don't have an immediate solution, and we're not so certain that this might be the correct solution, but we do feel that it bears warrant and a serious look. We would say and urge that in the proposal, the word temporary be a word that is well held, that the word temporary be a word that has a no-holds-barred deadline, and that it is done so with the recognition that the homeless citizens of Portland are already camping under the bridges. Even right now...
Folks, please, folks, let's try to keep it quiet enough that folks can testify. Keep going.
It already exists as a current, relevant, realistic moment in our Portland reality, and we simply urge that Dignity Village and R2-D2 have set a model of efficiency and care for community that can be sustainable and upheld, and we urge the city to give it due consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Okay. Next floor, please.
The next, first, is there an Anthony Jensen?
Okay. Mr. Jensen.
Next four are Dan Valeri, Michael McKenna, Gloria Harrington, and Gail Shepherd. Harrington, thank you. Then let's go with Dave Davis in this group. And they'll be followed by Claudette Ross, Michael Gould, Lightning, and Richard DeZizu.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Dan Valliere. I'm the CEO at Reach Community Development. Reach manages Station Place Tower, which you've already heard about, but it's affordable senior apartments adjacent to the Lovejoy Ramp. First, let me just comment. I was referenced briefly, but clearly this is a challenging topic. There's a specific issue on the table today, but really it's about a much bigger issue of homelessness. And clearly, there are not enough resources to address the problem. Even Right to Dream 2 would admit that, you know, they're not solving the problem. They're just a piece of a much broader picture. And it's also clear a lot of cities are struggling with this problem. There's no easy solution. That being said, and focusing in on this specific situation, I'd like to echo that there is a need for thought and investment in security at this location. That's already the case because there are already many problems and concerns that I'm hearing about from residents about security in the area. And the unknown, but I think it's logical to assume that there could be more people in the general vicinity after this relocation. So there's a clear case to be made that there's going to need to be a significant investment in security if this is going to work. And I am saying that having met myself with Right to Dream 2, and I will say from my meeting with them was just one, so it's not a final judgment for everyone else, but my impression was that they take security just as seriously as we do. So I will say the security within the camp would not be my concern as much as the security in the broader area. But that second point is a very significant point, and so I just hope that is thought through in the context of this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
I'm an owner, manager, developer, contractor of real property. I come here today to express my feelings about the placement of the tent city next to our Burlington Towers apartments. It's 155 apartment homes and mixed-use retail on the ground level. The residents of the Burlington have great apprehension of what the city is trying to do, and it's largely because of the economic mix that it creates and the perceptions, real or imagined, but still there, of the down zoning of the neighborhood that has worked so hard to become the Pearl, the place to live. The very nature of a non-compliant environment being situated right next door to the established community as an act by the city just drops the whole perception of value. My representation of the village of not being compatible is borne out in the fact that the Burlington Tower is next door to the Pearl Court, and in between is the vacated Kearney Plaza or Kearney Street, and it is a plaza. And it has become a magnet for not too good activities. We end up policing with the police of the area, and it draws in drugs and alcohol and a lot of loitering such that the residents or the general public can't use the facilities. Putting this non-conforming use or this very different use creates fear amongst our residents, particularly the people, the women most notably, I guess, and it would increase a lot of the security requirements for the building because it is secure, but it's not totally secure. And we already have some problems by, obviously not non-tent people, but by vagrants and people walking the streets. And the placement of this community would be a detriment to the Burlington. So if you talk about 1% less vacancy in a building like the Burlington, you're talking about a $500,000 to $600,000 loss of value. And when you talk about adding security, you add income or you add expenses, which reduce the income, reduce the value, and we're trying to increase rents. We won't get rents. It'll just be a very negative situation. And everybody in the Pearl has worked very hard to make it a great place to live. And with this non-conforming use, it'll go backwards a little bit, and no one wants to see that. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I live in Portland.
Just give us your name for the record.
Dave Davis.
Okay.
But now that the settlement agreement is public, I'm more confused in this camp relocation, how it solves any issues.
Yeah, get a little closer, Dave.
Excuse me. Okay. I'm going to start over. I want
Please.
You to hear me, okay?
Yeah.
Now that the settled agreement in the is public, I'm more confused on this camp relocation and how it solves any issues. The settlement agreement entered into by Commissioner Fritz and not the council, says that paragraph 2, the right to dream, must cease and desist from all camping activities on the current site. But paragraph 3 says that if the city decides to issue a permit for such camps,